either you're micromanaging people or you give them complete freedom. And either end of that results with usually negatives. Having people that are mismanaged is not a problem. It's really a dichotomy that the leader needs to learn how to manage of how do I not give people complete freedom, but also not overly micromanage people? How do I meet in the middle and manage people in a way that makes doing their job easier, not harder?
How do you create an unshakable business? I crossed $100 million in net worth by the age of 28. Now I'm growing acquisition.com into a $1 billion portfolio. In this podcast, I share the lessons I've learned in scaling big businesses and helping our portfolio companies do the same. Buckle up and let's build.
This is one of the shadow sides of like what I do and even what I teach, right? I'm helping people primarily start a solopreneur type business where they don't need anybody else. And there's enough tools and free and paid to create a multi-six, even seven figure business without a single person on your team. Really, you could get away with it. And even those that have somewhat of a team, right? They might just be like contractors here and there. So I think one of the negatives of that is it's very self-oriented by the nature of it. And for someone like me, I can speak only for myself. I mean, I hear my students talk about this as well, and everyone's personality is different, but I'm introverted by nature and I'm happy to like whittle away at something on my own. And I didn't have any experience running a company with team before. Like, I didn't want to be a business owner. I wanted to be a rock star, and that dream kind of died, and I became an audio engineer, and then I became a YouTuber and then a content creator. And so I've always done stuff by myself. And so I've been comfortable with that. And then you hit some ceilings and then you realize that you don't know everything. And, you know, so I feel like there is that shadow side of like, either we're going to limit our growth or potential, or to what your point was, you get to the end of, you win maybe the race you set out to run, but you want it alone. So can you talk to like a solopreneur like me? I mean, I have more of a team now, but like that type of person that I'm helping coach, what are the blind spots we're not seeing as solopreneurs? And how can we break past our fears of like, but I don't know how to hire. I don't know who to hire first. I don't even know how to think that big. What would you say to someone like me?
I would break it down to this, which is one, I think there's preferences, right? Some people would prefer not to have to interact with people as much. And so that's maybe what they want to do. They're like, I would just like to be alone. I don't want to. And that's trade-off, right? So it's like, I make a trade-off of the fact that my time is not necessarily of my own all the time. Because I run a large company and I have lots of companies I'm responsible for, I don't have, like, my calendar is not free, right? It is booked every day, all day. Now, the other side of that is that I have so many people I get to celebrate with. I have so many people who I'm close to. I have so many amazing relationships that I like cherish. And so I would make that trade-off all day. But some people would not. They say, I prefer being alone. I prefer having autonomy of my own time. I don't want to have things on my calendar. I would rather spend that time with my kids. It might be a season of life. It might just be a preference in general. I would say that for a lot of people, the skill of starting a business and growing a team specifically, you have to acquire a lot of skills at once that you typically don't have. And if somebody hasn't had a job in which they have had to start from scratch a team and grow it, then they likely don't have the skill of building a team when they start a company. And the irony of it is that it's not one skill that's required, but there's like five skills that are required to effectively build a team. And so what happens is that most people try and they fail the first time. Something doesn't work out. Somebody does something shady. Someone steals client. Like, there's so many things that happen, right? And so the first time that they do it, the first thing that happens is negative. And so then they have a negative association with having a team. And then maybe they try again and they have two of the five skills, but they don't have five of five. And then they have another incident that happens that's negative and they build another negative association with having a team. And so what happens is that if you don't continue until you have all five of five skills to build a team, you don't break through that barrier. All that you've done is accumulate a lot of evidence to say that building a team is really hard and you might be better off by yourself. You know what I mean? And I think that I just look at it as evidence. It's like, you have more evidence to show you that building a team is hard and doesn't equate. If anything, you've lost money hiring this team, right? They haven't made you money. Sure. They haven't made your life easier. They've made it harder. You've spent more money. It sucks. And so the tough part is that some people have a very short, what you would call is like extinction curve. So what it means is that like when a negative reinforcer happens, they just immediately back off. They're like, I'm not doing that again. Some people, when you say someone's persistent, they have a longer extinction curve, meaning they will try 6 more times until the thing works. And those people who have higher persistence, then they get to the other side and then they can create a positive association with having a team. But if you don't, if you have a short extinction curve and it takes one negative event to deter you from building a team, then, I mean, don't build a team, don't build anything, because you're just going to end up quitting. And so I think it really just comes down to, can you get through the first 5 or 6, you know, negatively reinforcing incidences that happen when you build a team? Or can you try and acquire the skills ahead of time and make your, and at least get yourself informed about what it takes to build a team, so you can maybe skip through some of those so it's not so painful, so that you can get to the other side and actually, you know, I would say like recognize the fruits of what it means to actually have a team that makes you money and makes your life easier. But it's just like most people just don't get over that hump. And so I don't blame them, because it's like, yeah, it is shitty in the beginning. And for most people who have never done it, it's a terrible experience.
So I love that. And I think that's an honest answer. So I appreciate that, because I feel like people have a either fear of hiring and starting to build a team and start, you know, learning the skills of managing a team. And so they already know it's going to be hard. And then, but they might have been sold the bill of goods from a coach or somebody that like, oh, you delegate it and it, all your problems go away. Like other people do the work for you. And like, and so they want that dream. And there's this mushy middle of what you just described of like the self-education and oh, it's more complicated than I thought, but that doesn't mean you don't do it or some version of it. It's just, do you have the grit to stay in there? I love that extinction curve. Would you say, like, go back in time, so like pre like gym launch era for you guys, like what was the skill or what was the belief that you wish you had back then? If you could go back and give Layla that belief that she needed back then, that would have helped you push through even, I mean, you guys have had a lot of success. So, I mean, you don't have to say the story needs to be rewritten, but like, what do you wish you knew skill set or belief wise before, you know, the gym launch, let's say, that you didn't have, that you do have now?
I would say that a lot of the pain that I had to bear in growing gym launch came from not being able to manage the dichotomy of building a team, and rather looking at team and, you know, lack of performance as a problem. So I look at management as something that exists on, and it's basically like either you're micromanaging people or you give them complete freedom. And either end of that results with usually negatives. And the ideal is to be somewhere in the middle. And so I really look at it as like, you know, micromanaging people versus like giving full autonomy. It's like all the things that exist in management. Like having people that are mismanaged is not a problem. It's really a dichotomy that the leader needs to learn how to manage, of how do I not give people complete freedom, but also not overly micromanage people? How do I meet in the middle and manage people in a way that makes doing their job easier, not harder? And I don't think that I understood that. I think that I used to default towards, in the beginning, I think I gave a lot of freedom and autonomy, like almost like too much, because I also was young. I didn't know what I was doing. And so I was like, just go in there and do it. I don't know. I have no fucking idea, you know? And then on the other end, it's like, then I felt like, hey, you guys aren't doing a good job. So then I would put in a ton of mechanisms. I'd overly manage people. And then I realized that both of those don't help people do their job. It's like my job as a leader, right? And anyone's job as like a manager is like, how do I make it easier for them to do their job, not harder? And that was something that I didn't understand at that point in time. Okay, let's look at then. How could I make it easier? If you look at like the angle of taking it all the way to like complete freedom and autonomy, that's not easy, because typically it lacks clarity. They're not clear on what they need to do when you just say, go figure it out. And I think that one of the main things a leader needs to be able to do is to provide clarity. Whereas on the other end, micromanaging someone, what does that do? Well, that makes them feel suppressed. Do people who feel suppressed perform at a high level? Yeah. So you don't get the best out of people. And so it's tough, because I think what I always try to do with people is get them to accelerate. Like, you don't need to go to either end of the spectrum. Like, let's just start from the middle, because that's really what people need. But I don't think that I understood, like, what is the purpose of a leader or manager to make it easier for the people that report to them to do their job. And that belief I guess you could say like way in which I view work is what has helped me a ton, because I look at it like, how can I make it easier? Anything that falls under that scope is what I would attribute to being like my responsibility.
I love that. That's so wise. And I've definitely done both extremes in team. And I've literally was having a conversation with my wife about that today, about a certain individual. And I was like, man, if I know I've micromanaged so much in the past that like I default to the other, which is probably abdicating way too much responsibility and to just to like get me off the hook. But is it really helping them? And it's not helping me, because like, I'm like, we're not getting where we need to go. So I feel both of those extremes. So that's wise. I love that. And that feels like, and that's probably why so many leaders fail in companies, because it's such a delicate dance and balance to get right. It probably requires so much, like you mentioned soft skills, but really so many human skills to be able to read people, know what they need, know what you need, be able to, it's not everyone's the same. You can't even treat them exactly the same or even on the same day. Like certain days we're just not feeling the same. So there's a lot there.
Yeah, there's a lot. And I think that it's a very tedious job to be a leader of people. Like there's a lot of repetition. You train someone up on one thing, and then it's like 2 weeks later, there's somebody else who needs to get trained up on like something 2 degrees different. Like you have to have a really high threshold for, yeah, I would say like boredom and repetition. Hey guys, a quick break to tell you that if you'd like to see more content from me that isn't just listening to my voice, you can go on and check out my YouTube channel as well. Just search Layla Hormozi and you'll see me in my face. Thanks again for listening, and let's get back to the show.
I love that quote of the day. I love that. I do want to quickly ask you about your marriage, because it's really unique. Like you and Alex getting to work together, getting to do a lot together. I'm always fascinated by couples or families that run businesses together, because you know, you always hear, you know, don't ever go into business, you know, with friends or family. And I have lots of friends that actually have gone into business, not only with their spouse, but with their families as well, and hiring moms and dads and brothers and sisters. It's pretty beautiful. So what would you say, like, real quick, I think it's working really, really well from what I can tell. And you guys seem to have a lot of fun. What works and what doesn't work though for you guys to balance, like, hey, it's work mode and we're doing work. And then it's marriage mode and we're working on the relationship or the hats. Like what do you find is what works for you guys, or does that work really well? Or what's a challenge for you guys as a married couple you want to keep your marriage healthy and strong, but you also want to give the company what it needs. So maybe you could talk to that a bit.
You know, it's an interesting question. I think I have a little bit different of a viewpoint on it, because I think that in the beginning, we got a lot of advice that was like, you know, plan one date night a week. Don't talk about work at dinner when you go on the date. Like, you know, when you get done with work, don't like go talk about it. And for me and Alex specifically, that doesn't work. Like, I'm way too far obsessive with what we do to not talk about it all the time. And so is he. And so we actually both love talking about it all the time. And I think that that's one thing that is unique to us that is. And the reason I say it is because that is so not what works for many people's marriages. But I think that what I've learned in, you know, building our marriage, and I would say like it just continues like get exponentially better year over year, is most of the things that other people have given me as advice do not work for us. In fact, like our marriage is such a like compilation of just like what works for Layla and Alex, not even like what works for marriages. And I think that a lot of people look at other people's relationships and say like, we should do what they're doing. Like, what are Layla and Alex doing? Because that could work for us. But Layla and Alex, every time that we tried to look at somebody else's marriage and say like, let's try that, it felt like it was imposing upon like our preferences and what we liked doing. And then I think, again, it's first principles thinking of like, what do we want for our marriage? And does it, here's the thing. If Layla and Alex are obsessive of talking about work and talk about work all the time, is that a problem if they both enjoy it?
Yeah, it's a good question. You
know, right? I would say not. And if somebody labels that as a problem, like, I'm okay with that. I don't care if they think it's a problem. I like it. It's a problem I'll take and I'll keep any day. So I think that a lot of it has been, we've created an environment in our marriage where both of us allow the other person to fully be themselves. And I think that we both have zero expectations of each other, but we are 100% committed to the marriage and 100% put our foot forward, our best foot forward for the other person. I expect nothing. If Alex wants to work every day from like 6 a.m. to midnight for the next 3 weeks, it wouldn't bother me. Now, I would say on a long enough time horizon, like, is that the rest of our lives? But I think that a lot of people, like, we put rules in place for relationships. But I think that I value our marriage and I value our business. Now, does that mean that every day is a balance between the two? No. But I think that on a long enough time horizon, there is, quote, balance between the two in terms of, like, there are weeks that maybe are lighter with work, therefore we get more time with our marriage. And then there are weeks that are really heavy with work, and so we don't get much time for our marriage. I actually don't mind that because I like being able to miss my husband. I like the time where I feel like, oh, I want to spend time with Alex, because I also know the other side of that, which is when you have too much time with your spouse, it starts to feel like, oh gosh, I've seen enough of them. I got to go get some time with somebody else. And so yeah. I actually think that the dynamic that we have something we get to work on together, that me growing and improving myself is beneficial for Alex, and Alex growing and improving himself is beneficial for me, because we both put those skills into one thing that benefits both of us. I think that that could be said for kids. It could be said for building a house. It could be said for like planting a garden together. Like, I think we have something mutual that if both of us increase our skill sets in some way and then pour it into this third entity, and then the entity benefits both of us, I think that is a really great dynamic for a marriage. But at the same time, you know, I think you have to figure out what works for you. You know, like, I think a lot of people ask, like, how do you guys make it work? And I'm like, you know, I was super, like, I have engineered my entire life toward my career and what I want to build. And Alex has done the same. And then we just met each other and then do it together now. And it works for us. But I don't think that works for most people.
Yeah, it's a beautiful answer. It's honest. I really appreciate you sharing. I respect you guys figuring out what works for you. And I love how you've said this twice now, but, you know, first order thinking and not being so prescriptive about things. Well, that's what they do, therefore I'm going to take the same prescription for me. You're doing the harder work of what really works for us. And what do we really value and want? I just think there's a lot of wisdom there. I love it so much. I want to respect your time. I have one final question I ask on every episode. This can go in a completely different direction. It's kind of a philosophical one. Something I call the golden rule segment. And so usually, like, you know, if my guest has kids, I'll ask him about it with kids, but it could be, you know, nieces, nephews, anybody that you care about this person so much, right? And the people that you're pouring into, and even employees that you have, where like, you're probably giving them wisdom and counsel all the time, and you really wish they would remember and all the things you're teaching them, because you have a lot to share. But like my kids, I know they're going to forget 99% of the things I teach them or share or whatever. But there's some things that I want them to remember forever. So if there was one piece of advice that you would want the people that you love to remember and carry with them forever, sort of like a golden rule, if they forgot everything else you taught them, but this one piece of advice, what would you say that would be?
I would say, said most simply, and you've probably heard this before, but I really think about it all the time, it's just like, leave everyone and every place better than you found it. I think about that every day, and I try to do it in everything I do. Like, people, in every conversation, how can I leave this person better? Every place I go, how can I leave it cleaner than it was when I left? You know, every company that we invest in, how can I leave it better than when we invested in it? Like, I just constantly am thinking through that frame. And so I think that's what I would leave them with.
That is so beautiful. I love it. My daughter has a shirt that says, leave it better than you found it. And that's what made me think of when you said that. I love that so much. This has been amazing. So one thing I will just say that I really admire about both of you guys, Layla, is you're 100% authentic. From day one, ever since I started seeing y'all's content years ago, it's like, you've just shown up and you're like, this is what we think, this is what we believe, this is what we do. You're not trying to be something else, or like you said earlier, like game the system. It's just a breath of fresh air. And I think that's one reason why so many people are attracted to your content, is it's like, oh, we're so attracted to people who just feel fully free as who they are and are putting something out there, and they're not really, you're not asking for anything. You're just like, here, this will help you. And it's so magnetic. So just kudos to you for continuing that. Layla, thank you so much for your time. This has been great.
Thank you, Graham.